Welcome to Shnayim Mikra, the daily podcast sponsored by the Orthodox Union, hosted by OU.org, in which we investigate one aliyah per podcast of the current Parshat HaShavua. My name is Yitzhak Etshalom, and I'm honored to be studying Parshat Vayishlach with you. And today we're going to be taking a look at the second aliyah in Parshat Vayishlach, which begins in Perek Lamed Bet. Now here there are some chumashim of different pasuk numerations, but we will begin for our purposes at pasuk yod dalet. Either way, it's the same words. Vayalan sham balailahu. So Yaakov had set up the gift to send to Esav. He encamped balailahu, and this is going to be important for understanding the critical scene towards the end of the aliyah. Vayalan sham balailahu. He slept there. He lodged there that night. There's something a little bit strange here, because normally it would say that he did the action, at the end of the action he slept there, or that he slept there and woke up the next morning and did it. So we'll have to see what how that plays in. And he took min habavi adom, meaning that which he had accessible, mincha of course means a gift, le'esav achiv, and again, pointing out esav achiv, we've had that emphasis often on the brotherhood, the fraternity. And Rashi here points out how the ratio between males and females was based on mating habits. So there were 200 goats and 20 rams, 20 male goats. Rechelim matayim ve'elim esrim. They had the same ratio between lambs and rams. Gmalim enikot v'nehem shloshim. You had 30 nursing camels and their children. Parot arba'im ufarim asara. With the cows, it's 4 to 1. One bull to 4 cows. Atanot esrim vayarim es asara. And with the donkeys, it was a ratio of 2 to 1. But he sent all of these animals. Vaitain bi'ara vadav, eder eder levado. And he sent them one flock at a time. The question is, why is he sending them one flock at a time? Why is he sending one large flock? Well, the simple explanation is that these are animals that don't necessarily get along, and that they would pester each other, and therefore we want to send them separately. There's another approach here, which is that he wants to, as Rashi says, las bi'ayno sholoto rasha. He wants Esav to see it as a much larger gift. And that approach of Rashi continues to support the notion of Yaakov as being somebody who is essentially about deception, which of course is what we saw throughout Parshat Toldot. And of course he ended up spending 20 years with the master of deception, at least midrashically, and that is Lavan. There are other reasons to consider Eder Eder Levado, is to just keep the gift in an organized fashion. And each herdsman was in charge of what he was in charge of. And then he commands them to go in front of him so he can inspect them and to see, leave a gap between each flock. And then he commanded the first, meaning the head of the first herd, Kivgashcha Esav Achi. When, here ki is not if, but when Esav, my brother, again, my brother, encounters you, Ushalcha Lemor, and he asks you, L'mi ata v'anatelech u'l'mi elefanecha. So notice that Yaakov assumes that Esav is going to behave like a normal person would behave here, not like a wild man. He sees somebody with the flock. He's not going to immediately attack him. He's going to say, who are you? Where are you going? And who does this belong to? And here's what your answer will be. V'amartat li'avdecha li'Yaakov. The answer is, first of all, it belongs to Avdecha Yaakov, which means, by the way, that he is not answering. It sounds like he's answering the last question, but he's really answering the first question, which is, l'mi'ata. Who do you belong to? And the answer is, l'avdecha li'Yaakov, which means, I am a slave of your slave. I belong to a slave of your to your slave. So, mincha hi shlucha laduni le'esav. Which, of course, answers the second question and the first question, and the third question. In other words, where are you going to? I'm going to wherever you are. And that's why the whole point of this is a gift. Negam hu acharenu. And indeed, Yaakov is following us. So it's not that Yaakov is sending this gift in lieu of his arrival. Yaakov is sending this in advance of his arrival. He commanded everybody who was leading the flock and even who was following. So Esav should hear this over and over, that all of this flock is a gift on behalf of Yaakov, who is then going to be coming. And this is a proper entourage for wealthy people to send a gift ahead before they come. Right? And Yaakov wants them to tell Esav so that he should hear these words. Now, achapra fanav is a very tricky phrase. It may mean I'm going to ask his forgiveness with this gift, allow myself to see his face, his countenance with this gift. Of course, that's something that in general in meeting royalty people would do, and they would use that kind of phrasing also. Be ani aduni avon. I am the sinner, please have mercy on me. So it may mean that. On the other hand, it may be very pointed here, and he may be saying, I accept that I behaved wrongly towards you, and I've done my rehabilitation, as it were, and now I'm want to greet you. That could be what he's saying. Meaning, I'm hoping that Esav will agree to greet me properly after I've sent all of this. So what happened? So that's exactly what happened. That was all of Yaakov's wording. And now it happened. The mincha passed in front of him, and he slept on that night in the camp. Now, the question is this kicking back to Pasuk Yod Daled? Or is Pasuk Yod Daled sort of a continuation, meaning he slept that night? It didn't tell us he got up the next morning. We have to assume it. And then all of this putting together the herds was the whole next day, and then he slept in the camp that night. Or is the beginning of Pasuk Yod Daled like a topic sentence saying, Vayalan Shem Balayla, he camped it that night. In the meantime, what had happened? What was going on while he was camping? All of this was having got put together and had been sent, and then he spent that night. Question is, are there two nights or one night here? And then, Vulan Balayla Machanet. And now what happens? Just read the through Pshat, Vayakum Balayla Hu. Now, Balakum Balayla Hu, really, the wording should be Laila Hahu. This is where Margoliot points out, in several places, but he points it out here, that there is a phenomenon that in Mikra, which he refers to as Olev Yored, which is when you have the end of a word ends with the same letter that the next word begins with, sometimes one of them drops out, and certainly when they're three in a row. And here it would be Balaila Hahu. Hey, hey, hey. So as one drops out, the simple read is, he got up on that night. But if we read it the way it's written, it means that Vayakum Balayla Hu, meaning he alone got up that night. So we now find out where Yaakov has been camping. He's been camping just north of the Yabok River, the Yabok Wadi, which travels on an east-west line, leaving from just south of the Kinneret going into Jordan. So that's where he is, and he's crossing to go south towards Esav. On the other hand, the question is, why is he doing this in the middle of the night? And we'll get back to that. And it also raised the question, how could it be Vayakum Balayla Hu? He alone got up, if he's then moving his two wives, his two Shvachot, Bilhah and Zilpah, and the eleven sons. Dina's left out of this, but the 11 sons, then he didn't get up alone. They all got up too. So we have to see how this is to be understood. So he took them, and he crossed them over the Nachal, so clearly they're awake, and then he brought everything that was his, all of his possessions. Now this is in the middle of the night, it's at night, in the dark, going into a ravine, which means you have to climb down and climb up. It's not very easy to do. This is quite an effort. Question is, why is he doing it? And then the famous scene, Vayibater Yaakov Levado. At some point, Yaakov was left alone. Vayavek Ish Imo Ad Alot HaShachar. Suddenly, a man out of nowhere came and wrestled with him, or tussled with him, or fought with him until dawn. Vayar Ki Lo Yacholo. And this, of course, is nicely ambiguous, deliciously ambiguous, but the simple read of it is that the Ish, whoever it was, saw that he could not overtake Yaakov, va'yiga v'chaf yirecho, and he grabbed the ball of the joint where the hip comes in, va'teka kaf yirech Yaakov v'yav koimo, and he displaced it, and it got disjointed, separated, as it were. Va'yomer shalcheni, and then this fellow says, let me go, ki alah ha'shachar, because the morning has come. Now the question is what that means. So in the traditional read, or in the classical read, this is a malach, and a malach has his jobs in the morning in Shemayim, and he has to leave. Of course, a very strange statement. Let me go for its morning time. Vayomer lo ashalechachakim berachtani. And Yaakov now is in the driver's seat. I'm not going to let you go. In other words, I got a grip on you. I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. Yaakov wants a bracha from this ish because he's defeated him. The bracha would be a way of saying uncle. Vayomer lav mashmecha, vayomer Yaakov. So the man says to him, what's your name? And he says, Yaakov. Now, as I mentioned in Parshat Toldot, the name Yaakov in its original presentation means someone who holds onto the heel. But there are other allusions that come in there, such as ambush, which came up in Esav's words, Yivayakveni Zephamayim, and it seems to do with trickery and ambush, and so therefore this ish says, Vayomer lo Yaakov Yamer Ochim Chakim Yisrael. Your name will no longer be Yaakov. He's not changing his name, he's telling him in the future. At some point, your name will no longer be Yaakov, rather Yisrael. Now look at the word Yisrael, and you can see that it spells Yashar-El, which means, as opposed to going in a roundabout way, in a tricky way, you do things straight up. Because now, you have encountered an enemy, and you've stood up to him, and faced him, albeit in the night, albeit in the dark, and unless you faced him up, and you've won. Why? Kisarita Elohim v'Melashim v'atuchal. You have fought with God and man, and you are able to hold your own. So who's the God that he fought with? That's what leads us to feel that this is some sort of a divine messenger. Of course, we have other reasons to think that, because every time you find an unnamed Ish in Bereishit, it's somebody who's doing a defined function. As an example, in Parshat Vayeshev, when Yosef is out wandering, looking for his brothers, and he meets an Ish, and the Ish directs him to where the brothers are, he's directing Jewish history. And Chazal said that's Gavriel. This is another malach. The other thing is, what's the statement about him having to leave in the morning? Third of all, how does he give him this prophecy that your name will be Yisrael? So it certainly gives us the sense that this is some sort of divine messenger. So Yaakov now wants to know the name of this fellow so that he can say who he defeated, who he met. He said, why you ask my name? Meaning, my name is not a relevant player here. And he blessed him, and the blessing is something we don't hear about. It could be that he blessed him and that he said that you've won or something. Now we know of a place in Transjordan called Pnuel. Gideon later encounters it in Perek Zion, the end of Perek Zion of Shoftim. And here we find that Yaakov named the place Pnuel or Pniel. Why? Ki ra'iti Elohim panim el panim v'tinatzel nafshi. I saw God face to face and I was alive. So you recognize he had a divine encounter here. This, by the way, is something that plays out. Several of the points of this scene play out in Gideon's life, notably his actions in the middle of the night and his concern that after having seen God that he would die and he was saved. And now the sun came up as he passed through Pnuel. And here he was limping. He was limping as a result of this interaction. Important to interject here a note about this divine interaction is that the Rambam famously, in his comments in Mor Nevuchim, in the second Chelek, are quoted by the Ramban at the beginning of Parshat Vayera, maintains that this entire scene was a dream. In other words, that Yaakov was asleep, and that he had this vision based on the Rambam's creedal statement that it is impossible for anybody besides Moshe Rabbeinu to have a nevuah while awake. And one of the challenges against it, in which case the entire piece makes sense, that vayalan balaylahu, and then everything from there is while he's asleep. One of the big challenges is if that's the case, then why was Yaakov limping? That's a famous challenge. In any case, alken lo yechlu v'nei Yisrael gidan asher asher akaf ha'erech ad ha'yom hazeh, ken agab ha'chaf yarech Yaakov v'gidan asher. And then the Pasuk says, therefore B'nai Yisrael. Now who are B'nai Yisrael? It's a little bit of a tricky statement. They do not eat the sinew, Gidhan Nasheh. The word Nasheh is interesting because it means they pulled out. That's at that place until this day because it was touched, because he touched Yaakov there. The Mishnah in Chulin in the seventh Perek talks about, whether or not this Pasuk really is part of the narrative, or really was something that was added in later. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that it is a part of the narrative. Chachamim answer back that we are not called Bnei Yisrael. I have backwards. We are not called Bnei Yisrael until Har Sinai, and that this Isur was given in Har Sinai, And take a look at Rashi, a very interesting Rashi in Chulin Daf Kuf Aleph, who maintains that this pasuk was added by Moshe at Har Sinai to hear, as opposed to leaving it where it would belong in Parshat Shemini, so that we would understand what the reason for the prohibition, the ritual prohibition of Gid Hanasheh. In any case, the Aliyah continues, Vayisa Yaakov Einav Vayarineh Esav Ba. Now Yaakov looks up and he sees Esav coming. Vibar Mamiot Esh, there's his 400 men. Note the similarity between Esav's entourage and David's entourage later on. Vayachatz at Adadim Aliyah V'yal Rachel V'yal Shtei Ashvachot. Now here Vayachatz seems to be the same Yachatz he had earlier, which is to divide them up from Mechitza, and he split the children up. And he gave each of the children to their mothers. In other words, he separated them with mothers. Vayasim tashvachot v'dialdehen rishona. Who did he put first? The least favored. Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher with Bilhan, Zilpah. Then vet Leah v'lada acharonim. And then Leah with her six children. Vet Rachel vet Yosef, with her seven children. Rachel vet Yosef acharonim. Rachel and Yosef, his beloved ones, were last. So now the division was not widthwise, but was rather linear, coming further to the back of the camp to be safer. And then Yaakov passed all of them to Esav. And in a very obvious demonstration of obeisance, he bows down seven times till he gets to his brother. Vayarotz Esav likrato can be read two ways. The Vayarots that we've seen so far in Bereishit has all been positive. Avraham running to the people to serve them food, Rivka running to bring water, and Esav here runs to his brother, Vayichabkehu, and he embraced him. Vayichabkehu evokes what we just heard a few psukim ago, Vaye Avek. Matter of fact, the Baal Shalim say that two words are related. Lehe Avek u'lechabek, to embrace. So he embraced him. Vayipol at Savara, Vayishakehu. And he fell on his neck, and he wept. Kissed him, vayivku. And this is Esav falling on Yaakov's neck, and kissing him, and they both weep. Then Esav looks up, and he sees the family. Who are these? And Yaakov says, these are the children that Hashem has granted to me. In other words, this is my family. Okay, there's a long aliyah, longish aliyah, but I want to go back to the very dramatic scene in the middle of the night, the wrestling scene, and share with you less mainstream approach taken by the Rashbam. The Rashbam, in his typical way, is very comfortable going in his own way, and he maintains as follows. He says that what was the purpose of this fellow wrestling Yaakov? And to understand that, you have to go back a little further and ask, why was Yaakov crossing the Yabok in the middle of the night? After all, if he had set up this large gift to go bring to Esav, he should have then gotten a good night's sleep, waited for the morning, and then come to greet Esav following the gift. What the Rashbam claims is that Yaakov was running away. Yaakov did not want to meet Esav. He was afraid of Esav. He wanted to get out of his way. So in the middle of the night, while sending all this wealth that he was ready to get rid of, he took that which was nearest and dearest, his own possessions and, of course, his family, and he's crossing the Yabok to try to get out of there. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a malach. It's not Sarosh Shal Esav, it's a malach. And the malach's job is to do two things. It's really to keep Yaakov in place, but also to let Yaakov see that he doesn't need to run away. And so therefore, how does he keep him in place? Well, first of all, he wrestles with him all night, and that's why when the morning comes, he doesn't need to be there anymore, and says, I have to leave because morning has come. And second of all, he lames him so Yaakov can't run away. And then he tells him, from now on, you'll no longer be a Yaakov, you'll be a Yisrael. You'll be somebody who can face straight on. The truth is that it takes Yaakov still several episodes until he's able to do that. It is an evolution that we see and a growth process that we see, because it does not happen right away, as we see in his approach to Esav in this parak. But he does meet Esav, and of course the rest plays out as what we comfortably call Jewish history. Okay, we will pick up with the third Aliyah in the next podcast, but in the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.